This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Friday, the New York Times gave a preview of Treasury Secretary Paulson's proposal for reforming oversight of the federal regulatory system for financial institutions and even insurance companies. And today, the 218-page plan was presented in the Treasury Department's cash room, appropriately enough. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson declared a strong financial system isn't important just for Wall Street, but also for working Americans. The plan gives the Federal Reserve more power to protect the stability of the entire financial system. It merges day-to-day bank supervision into one agency, which is currently overseen by five different agencies. It also creates a super agency in charge of business conduct and consumer protection. It does many of the things that the current Securities and Exchange Commission does. It also proposes eliminating the Office of Thrift Supervision and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, merging their functions into other agencies. The plan asks Congress to establish a federal mortgage origination commission that would set recommended minimum licensing standards for mortgage brokers and would set up an Office of Insurance Oversight inside the Treasury Department. Now, Congress would have to act on these proposals. It's an election year, so good luck Congress actually taking this up and doing something in 2008. Nonetheless, it lays out what the Bush administration thinks needs to be done to deal with the problems resulting from the subprime crisis as well as the ripple effect on the U.S. economy. We are joined by Merrick Fuchs, who is the writer of the Business Press Maven column of TheStreet.com, former New York Times columnist, and a former stockbroker with Shearson Lehman Brothers in Manhattan. Thank you for joining us on Air Talk.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. First of all, were there big surprises here for you, or is this the kind of reform plan that you expected to see from the Treasury Secretary?
Well, this was essentially the kind of reform package that I expected to see. It sort of runs along the line of the Homeland Security reform, which we got from this administration, which is, you know, to get everybody under one roof and sort of shuffle about who does what and what goes where. But there's not a whole lot of substance, which can, in the end, be a good thing, as insufficient as it is.
Democrats in Congress say that they don't think that this goes far enough. They have alternate proposals. Do you think it's likely something will actually be done, if not this year, after the election?
I think it really depends on where the market goes at this point. If we've gone through a lot of the worst of it, people, markets, certainly politicians have short-term memories. It seems like last I checked, everyone was all up in arms about immigration and pushing for legislation there, and we haven't heard much about that lately. So I think it's all dependent on how the market goes. Obviously, however you slice it, this is no short-term fix for what's going on now.
What are the responses from different sectors of the financial community?
Well, the responses are interesting. I think that Wall Street, somewhat surprisingly, might latch onto this one pretty quickly, as they did, for example, with the Elliott Spitzer fines that were seen as so draconian by outsiders. But through the Wall Street's eye, they obviously didn't look so bad, and Wall Street was happy to pay those fines and sort of move on. So I think that in this case, there's a good chance that Wall Street might see this for what it is, shuffling around of organizations, and happily, sort of glom onto it in the hope that it'll forestall anything more cumbersome.
What about banks and thrifts?
Banks and thrifts, there might be a slight bit more hesitancy. I think that anyone who doesn't want to be touched too badly, things could be a lot more rigorous on any of these companies than what was offered today. Oh. It's something that sort of appears to have teeth. But it's really just gumming these institutions.
We're speaking with Merrick Fuchs of TheStreet.com, where he writes the Business Press Maven column. Also with us from the Wall Street Journal is banking reporter David Enrich. Thank you, sir, for being with us.
My pleasure.
I wanted to ask you about the same question I just asked Mr. Fuchs on the banking and thrifts, because as I understand it, this would take away some of the authority that states have to regulate banks and thrifts.
You know, that's entirely possible. I'm not certain that that's the case. I mean, right now, most of the power is the federal regulators, whether it's the Fed or the OCC, or which is the Office of Comptroller of Currency, or the Office of Thrift Supervision and the Federal Deposit Insurance Corp, which are primarily responsible on the federal level. And I think it would do a lot to, and it would probably simplify the process a bit in the sense that it would have, and regardless of what kind of regulatory status you now have, you would be interfacing with a single regulator. Whether that, so in kind of small and mid-sized bankers that we're talking to about this don't, they're certainly not particularly worried about the prospect of greater regulation. I think the biggest change would really, as I think you were just saying a minute ago, would really be on in some of these Wall Street firms.
Okay. And so the banks aren't necessarily concerned that banks and thrifts would be treated the same way and state chartering would be diminished in this?
Well, as I just said, I have not focused. That's an interesting issue if to the extent that it weakens or and removes the prospect of state regulation. That's not something I was aware of, and it's not something I've been talking to folks about. But I think that, and in general, the banks and thrifts alike are right now dealing with a lot of pressure from regulators and from different regulators just that are concerned about whether the banks have set aside adequate reserves to handle and increasing defaults on all sorts of different types of loans. I think that's obviously an important role for regulators to be playing. It's also something that banks aren't are never thrilled about having different regulators coming in from different angles and creates a lot of work for them.
Mr. Enrich, what about looking at the subprime mortgage impact on the investment community, Bear Stearns and its pending sale? How might things have been different if this reform plan had been in place going into, you know, the whole ramping up in subprime loans?
Well, it's not clear that it would have done a whole lot to avoid the problems we're currently in. And one interesting way to think about it is that banks like Bear Stearns right now, or until now, I guess, haven't been regulated because they haven't been eligible to receive funding from the Fed, and that would change under this current approach. But if you look at banks, some of the most heavily regulated banks out there, like banks like Citigroup, which right now get regulated by institutions like the Fed, the FDIC, the OCC, and armies of regulators literally have permanent offices at Citigroup headquarters around the country, and that did absolutely nothing to prevent the Citigroup from getting into a huge mess that has caused billions of dollars in losses at the banks. And I think just the mere presence, the mere fact that new institutions would all of a sudden be subjected to regulatory scrutiny isn't necessarily significant in itself in terms of determining whether we could fend off another crisis. It's a question of how rigorously they're being regulated and how much and to what degree the regulators have teeth and the inclination to use their teeth supervising these institutions.
We're speaking with David Enrich, a banking reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Also with us, Jason Furman, director of the Hamilton Project. It's part of the Brookings Institution, deals with economics. And Mr. Furman was an advisor during the Clinton administration. Thank you, sir, for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
What's your response to the Paulson proposal? Do you think that it would have in some way mitigated the impact of the subprime mortgage crisis?
Well, it's over 200 pages, and I'm still digesting it.
You haven't memorized it yet?
I've not memorized it yet, and this is a conversation we're going to be having for years. My preliminary reaction is there were a lot of good ideas in the proposal, but not a lot of teeth to it. So there's relatively little in the proposal that would have required changes in the way that some of the financial institutions that have gotten into trouble acted. Big question is what the regulators would have done with their authority and with the greater information they had access to. But even with pretty vigorous action, it's hard for me to imagine that had all of this been in place, we would have avoided the problems we're in today.
Well, there are some who've argued, even without any kind of reform and oversight, that there was enough the federal government could have done earlier to have helped mitigate it. Do you think that there was that level of ability that the federal government had even under the current rules and configuration?
The federal government had more authority than it used. Whether it had enough authority is another question. It's a question we'll never know the answer to. But there were folks like Ned Gramlich, who was a governor of the Federal Reserve, who were putting out constructive ideas about how to regulate in the subprime market that were ignored by everyone else. And had we tried those, I'm not sure it would have been enough to overcome the massive force of the mass real estate enthusiasm, but it was something we certainly should have tried.
Well, and standing back from this now, you know, looking at these investment houses and how these high-risk loans were made on the assumption that values would seemingly go up on homes forever, I mean, how could this have happened? How could people you'd otherwise think are level-headed and very aware of market cycles, how could such an assumption seemingly have been made?
In retrospect, it's quite amazing. At the time, it felt like a bubble at the individual level. So it seemed like a number of these subprime loans clearly were loans where people were going to have a very hard time repaying. And at the consumer regulatory level, there seemed to be a certain amount of deficiency, and the Paulson proposal has a nod in the direction of that. What particularly surprises me, though, is how large the repercussions have been throughout the financial system and how the subprime market has amplified through markets throughout the economy, like auction rate preferred securities. And it's that second level of ripple effect, which is where the really smart people are supposed to be, who are meant to have prevented this.
And then the question, with such a loss of confidence affecting these different sectors, do these kinds of prescriptives like the Paulson plan offer a promise to build some optimism again? Quickly, your thoughts on that.
The most important step now is to get financial institutions lending and get people borrowing and getting the economy moving again. So it's the fiscal stimulus, the monetary stimulus, and the housing reform that are most important. A lot of these proposals are long-term, how to prevent this from happening again.
We'll continue our conversation on what's happened to Wall Street and the financial markets. This is Air Talk on KPCC.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is made possible by the W.M. Keck Foundation, supporting community-based organizations in Southern California and advancements in science, medical research, and higher education nationwide.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by Dance at the Music Center, presenting Complexions Contemporary Ballet, April 11th through the 13th at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. Recognized for its electrifying performances and breathtaking dancers, Complexions features the music of Marvin Gaye, Nina Simone, and Chopin, plus the Southern California premiere of Loose Change, choreographed by Taye Diggs. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com. More information at MusicCenter.org. Well, it's the most sweeping overhaul of the financial regulatory system since the Great Depression. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson is unveiling a 218-page proposal to change how the government regulates the nation's busiest and largest banks down to local insurance agents and mortgage brokers. Paulson says a strong financial system is important for working Americans as well as Wall Street. Members of Congress have a full plate as they come back from spring break. Economic woes are among the major items of concern. The Senate will be taking up a measure aimed at helping homeowners dodge foreclosure. Oil company execs will be quizzed tomorrow about both high prices and high profits. It's 11:21. Taking a look at the weather forecast all over the place this week. Mostly sunny today and tomorrow, but rain is possible on Wednesday, then partly cloudy on Thursday. Temps should be pretty consistent, though, with highs mostly in the 60s. In Rosemead now on the 10 West before Temple City, three cars are blocking the right lane. Traffic is slow from Valley Boulevard. In Long Beach on the 710 North before the 91, a stalled big rig is blocking lanes. It's 11:21.
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Fed Chairman Paulson making that proposal today. I'm sorry, the Treasury Secretary Paulson making that proposal today for reforming the federal oversight of a variety of financial institutions. Democrats at this point giving a kind of cold shoulder to it. We'll see what happens, whether Congress takes this up or not. It does require approval by Congress to make such sweeping changes. And then we take a look at how this folds into the issue of what happened with investment houses, Wall Street response to the bad loans, where defaults are coming fast and furiously out of the subprime mortgage crisis, and how other parts of the market are reacting as well. David Enrich of the Wall Street Journal is with us. Jason Furman of the Brookings Institutions, the Hamilton Project, and Merrick Fuchs, who is with TheStreet.com, writes the Business Press Maven column. I want to go back to you, Merrick Fuchs, and ask you about, you know, what the response was of the Federal Reserve to the crisis at Bear Stearns, where it looked like it was going to go under, and then the Fed helping to broker the sale of Bear Stearns and also offering lending at favorable rates to Bear Stearns and others who might be in difficult financial straits. You think that was the right thing to do?
No, I don't. You know, I think there was a lot of talk about how Bear Stearns was this 85-year-old institution and it couldn't be allowed to go under. But they've been so aggressive for so long, it's almost miraculous that they've survived 85 years. That something like this didn't happen sooner, whether it was back a generation ago when they were clearing trades for bucket shops or any number of other things. And I think what we do have to get at when we speak about what federal regulatory agency with what initials is going to be under what umbrella is the human nature aspect to this. And the fact that, you know, we just go through this time and time again, where as the economy heats up, financial instruments that are more and more risky, more and more new, or in the case of junk bonds, just something that had been revived, are used, and it eventually all falls apart. And we just have to look, like any good parent, to the issue of consequences, and that we could go with this Homeland Security model and rearrange things. But if we don't let there be consequences to this sort of aggression, it's going to happen again. And I think a lot of people on Wall Street, in the ramp-up to this thing, as they were pricing the subprime, these subprime loans to model, which essentially mean they could price them wherever they want, had in the back of their mind things like the bailout of long-term capital management. And they knew that when push came to shove, they'd be bailed out. And I think, you know, that sort of gets at the issue.
So what's the other scenario? Let's say that the Fed didn't step in, Bear Stearns was in the position. What would have been the other scenario if the federal government didn't act?
If they didn't act?
Yes.
Well, obviously a lot of pain for Bear Stearns employees and much wider short-term pain for Wall Street and the economy at large. But I think we'd absorb it, and I do think that we'd work out this debt eventually anyway, and we'd go on. The larger point would be Wall Street would go on not facing a reshuffling of the regulators, but in the knowledge that, hey, if they mess around this time, there's no safety net.
So it might mitigate against bubbles in the future, at least bubbles getting so big.
Right. I mean, bubbles are part of human nature. It's part of the economy, but it would tamp down it would tamp down the rate of that the bubble builds at, because I do strongly believe that on Wall Street there's this sort of back burner knowledge in the mind that you could sort of do anything, and it'll be cleaned up by the government when you're done.
David Enrich of the Wall Street Journal, I mean, this has sort of been John McCain's position that he's been taking in his campaign for the presidency, that the government, you know, shouldn't step in and do too much here. But is there a constituency for that? Because it seems like there's so much hue and cry in Congress for government to act.
Well, I think there's two competing, or at least two distinct reasons for regulatory intervention here. One would be to protect the safety and soundness of the financial institution and the banking system. The other is on the consumer side to step in and protect people who are getting or losing their homes or who have been somehow abused by shady practices in the financial services industry. So I think that there certainly are undoubtedly constituencies for both of those. And I think the Fed, most of what Hank Paulson laid out today is kind of more directed at the former than the latter, though, in protecting kind of the soundness of institutions. And I don't. And McCain, I think, when he says that he's focused, or he doesn't think the government needs to step in, I think that's a lot of his remarks were focused on kind of the consumer side.
The consumer side, yeah.
Yeah.
People took risks. They have to suffer the consequences of the risks.
Right. And I don't think that that's, and you can agree or disagree with the merits of his position on that. And I think everyone agreed that in terms of regulating institutions to protect the soundness of the system, I think there are questions about how far you go and whether people, in retrospect, whether regulators should have taken a harder stance. But I think that, and there's a pretty broad consensus that there needs to be, and the system's a bit outdated.
Also with us is Lakshman Achushan, Economic Cycle Research Institute Fellow. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Let me ask you, Locke, about whether you think Secretary Paulson and his proposal is going to be beneficial. Is it a better way to organize oversight?
With the Paulson proposal?
Yes, the Paulson plan.
I think it's kind of what we see is the administration is kind of kicking off this next effort of regulation. There's no way there's not going to be some regulatory response. You know, it's an election year. This is a big part of the debate. And as one of the former discussants was saying, you know, it's part of the cycle in a way. We go through these booms and then these busts. And on both ends of this, we have things that are done to regulations. When we're feeling good, we remove regulation. Towards the end of the 90s, that's the record-breaking expansion. We repealed Glass-Steagall, which, you know, was put into place in the aftermath of the 29 crash. So now, with this new kind of debacle, this bursting of the housing bubble and the credit market crisis that has ensued, there'll be certainly a call for more regulation because, you know, animal spirits do get out of control and cause a lot of disruption here in the broader economy. And so we're starting this debate. And what Paulson has done is he's kicked it off. He's kicked the ball down the field. And the challengers are going to run it back very, very hard and try to have more regulation than I think Paulson is proposing.
And what is the potential downside of more regulation? Because as you say, this is a pendulum swing. When things get bad like this and everybody jumps in and says, we need more regulation, this never should have been allowed to happen. But there are trade-offs, right?
Well, sure. There's cost to it. I mean, look in the wake of the 2001 recession, we had a lot of these corporate accounting scandals come to light, and the reaction to that was Sarbanes-Oxley, which may be part of the reason why a lot of corporate balance sheets today are pretty good. Okay, but there was a huge cost to that. I think if you talked with anyone who was in compliance on any of these corporations, they spent a lot of money complying with Sarbanes-Oxley and with all the accounting and regulations and paperwork that was part of it. Perhaps that was money well spent because, you know, while we're seeing a lot of crises in Wall Street, we're not seeing analogous problems with corporate balance sheets so far.
We're speaking with Locke Achushan of the Economic Cycle Research Institute. Our phone lines are open for you if you'd like to weigh in. What role do you think the federal government should have taken or should now be taking in response to the subprime loan crisis and its ripple effect on the U.S. economy? We're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. What would be your sweet spot for the place where regulation ends and risk begins, and how to allow people an opportunity to profit and benefit, and at the same time not make the system so volatile that you get wide swings? 866-893-KPCC. I want to go back to Merrick Fuchs of the Business Press Maven column for thestreet.com. You know, there is a lot of this really the debate about where that sweet spot is?
Oh, certainly. A lot of it. And unfortunately, there's no cookbook recipe. And if I could just circle back to costs, you know, the other two things we're dealing with, one is sort of a modern concern and the other is timeless, is we're dealing with international competition for business. And what you can see if you go too heavy on the regulation is people doing business overseas. And also, when we talk about new regulation of any type, no matter what good comes of it, we always have to leave open the possibility of the unforeseen happening. You know, we're going into uncharted territory. There are financial instruments that haven't been invented yet, which will be affected by these new regulations, these new agencies, and we don't know what's going to happen. So that always has to sort of be put out there as a caution.
Well, and I think the other point you were making as well, if the government is always there to backstop risk, then does it create a kind of a fantasy equation of risk that isn't reflective of real risk?
Right, exactly. And that's what we've seen many times in, you know, SNLs and effectively here, where there's, it's sort of like pretend play. I mean, people are going on as if there's risk, but resting easily in the knowledge that at the end of the day, there isn't. And that's what we really have to change.
Let's take a listener call. It comes from Bill in Newport Beach. You're on Air Talk.
Hi, Larry. I'm just curious why, like 6 years ago, after this tech bubble burst, and there was, you know, worries about deflation and everything, Chairman Greenspan and the Fed purposefully dropped rates. And Greenspan himself has even been on record saying back then, you know, these new innovations in mortgages should be good for the economy, should be good for demand, and more or less just kind of set up this volleyball for the spike that we're feeling right now. So my acute question is, why is it so issue prohibitive in this country, especially today with, like, Paulson's, you know, pronounced statement to consider just doing away with the Fed, the 95-year-old institution that more often than not urges the speculation that results in what we're dealing with today. Thank you.
All right. Jason Furman of the Hamilton Project, do you want to take that on?
Sure, I'm happy to answer the second question first. The Federal Reserve is really important to the stability of our economy, and it's gotten a lot smarter over past decades. I think it's extremely unlikely we'll have anything resembling the Great Depression, and that's because the Fed is out there actively supplying liquidity, cutting rates, and taking the types of policy steps it didn't take in the 1930s. To go to the first question of interest rate policy, I think when the Fed sets interest rates, it has to look at the macroeconomy as a whole. What's the unemployment rate, what's capacity utilization, what's the inflation rate? And based on those variables, I think it made the right decision in 2003. Job growth was extremely weak, and they needed more macroeconomic stimulus, and so they kept rates very low. The mistakes I think they made were on the regulatory side, where they didn't do things to stop some of these loans, particularly in the subprime market, from taking place, and also to some degree in not using their bully pulpit to try to restrain the housing bubble, or maybe even using the bully pulpit to push it along. Those, I think, were legitimate Fed mistakes, but the way they set interest rates was, at the time it seemed, and in retrospect it still seems, exactly what the economy as a whole needed.
Let's take another call. This is from Peter in Santa Monica. You're on Air Talk.
Yeah, hi there.
Hi, Peter.
One of my concerns whenever the executive comes out with these kind of administration proposals and regulatory proposals, equal application of the law. And as I've seen as an investment banker and a stockbroker since the 80s, small firms have a tendency to get the big slap, and the big firms get the big handout. I'd like you to address how you believe that any proposal that comes out of this administration is going to make things somehow more stable for the smaller firms and for the smaller investor, so that the public as a whole gets the benefit. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Locke Achushan of the Economic Cycle Research Institute.
Yes. Well, great question. And I think it takes us back to, was it the Continental Bank, which was TBTF, too big to fail. If you can reach that status, then you get certain protections, as we've been kind of debating and discussing here. If your failure, like Bear Stearns, for example, threatens the system because you have so many other counterparties and you'll influence confidence to such a large degree if you were to fail, then you do get less risk for the types of bets that you're making. And I guess in the very big picture, this is a worthwhile but difficult price to pay for the smaller firms and for the economy as a whole, because we wouldn't want the entire credit system to seize up. But I also want to mention something about the earlier caller who was asking about why do we keep doing this? Why do we keep flooding the liquidity and then getting these bubbles, and then isn't it obvious that we're going to have to pay for it? And I certainly do agree with the answers that were given, that it's the way that you're managing the broader economy. But it's a very good point. If you just look over the last 10 years, in response to the LTCM crisis and the Russian debt default, Chairman Greenspan in 98 and so answered with a lot of liquidity, which fueled a stock price bubble, which then collapsed and was part of the 2001 recession story. With the kind of slow growth and deflation fear, that was an extraordinary amount of liquidity that was given in 2002 and 2003, with interest rates at 1% for a couple of years. That's a lot of stimulus. So I think it was much more than simply trying to support job growth. This fear of deflation, which I think has to be said was a policy mistake. It gave us this housing bubble, which has now crashed, and we're answering it with more liquidity, right? So today we've got rate cuts, we've got special types of financing, we have more rate cuts coming, and you already have a bubble in your commodities, in your food and energy prices. At some point that will probably correct. So
I just have to break in here because I want to pick up on that point as we continue. What's going on in the commodities markets and in other sectors? Locke Achushan with us on Air Talk, along with Jason Furman, Merrick Fuchs, and David Enrich. Our focus on what's happened in the wake of the Wall Street crisis, from the subprime mortgage meltdown and Treasury Secretary Paulson's proposals for overhauling regulation made today.
It's a Prairie Home Companion, Under the Stars at the Greek Theater on June 6th. Garrison Keillor and the entire Prairie Home crew will be there, along with the world's greatest red-haired blues guitarist, Bonnie Raitt. Garrison Keillor and a Prairie Home Companion with Bonnie Raitt and Martin Sheen live at the Greek on Friday, June 6th. For tickets, go to kpcc.org.
If you can get to your phone, go to it, because it's time for a giveaway on KPCC. For a pair of tickets to Body Worlds 3 and Story of the Heart at the California Science Center now through September 7th. The California premiere of Gunter von Hagen's Body Worlds 3 features over 200 authentic human specimens focusing on the mysteries of our hardest working muscle, the heart. Tickets at californiasciencecenter.org. If you want to win a pair, be caller number 3 to 626-585-7800. 1-800-273-9393. Movie and TV producers will have to negotiate separate contracts with two actors' unions. The American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, or AFTRA, decided during the weekend to withdraw from the union's joint bargaining pact with the Screen Actors Guild, also known as SAG. Actress Tess Harper said AFTRA had no other choice. She contended on KPCC's Air Talk that extremists control the SAG Board of Directors.
The fact of the matter is that the very people who control the SAG board at this time were the people who made sure that the merger of the two unions did not happen, and they've been at war ever since.
Harper is a member of both unions. The unions maintained a joint bargaining pact for more than two decades. SAG president Alan Rosenberg called AFTRA's action extremely upsetting. He said it could damage negotiations with the producers over the actors' contract that expires on June 30th. In Inglewood right now, the 405 North is slow and go from Manchester. We just lost. Oh, from Manchester to Washington.
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Treasury Secretary Paulson today unveiled a plan that would significantly change how the federal government provides oversight of financial institutions. Even insurance companies would be affected by it, and there'd be greater oversight of mortgage brokers and how they offer their home loans. I invite your calls at 866-893-KPCC if you have questions for our guests. I want to go back to Locke Achishan of the Economic Cycle Research Institute, because you mentioned commodity markets and what's going on there. But everything it seems like that the federal government or the Fed itself does is reactive. Can it do something at this point proactive?
It's not very clear that they can. I mean, I think they do need to react to the debacles that have occurred. But looking forward, I mean, there were elements of Glass-Steagall that somewhat managed that some of the more extreme gyrations in the market. There were ideas that the Fed used to employ, for example, like increasing margin requirements on occasion, so that there was a little less leverage in the system. That those types of concepts have perhaps added to some stability in the past, and there'll probably be some versions of those in the future. But the bigger issue does lie with this liquidity kind of driven management of the economy. If you tell smart people, and presumably there are a few smart people on Wall Street, that they can make hundreds of millions of dollars for a few years by finding some aspect or loophole in, say, the stock market or in the housing financing or in the commodity market, which right now is in a strong bull market, they will do it. They're incentivized to do it, and even if at some point the music will stop, a lot of them are still going to go ahead and do it, and the chips will fall where they may, is often with on the middle class.
But if the chips don't actually end up falling, I mean, if government steps in to mitigate against it or in some way to soften the blow, does that do, as Merrick Fuchs was saying, encourage a greater degree of risk because it's the government's going to step in?
Well, there is a price being paid. You have an economic downturn. We now have a recession. There's a recession going on right now. So there's job losses. There are some losses for some on Wall Street. Not everybody, but there are a number of people who have taken losses there. And the government is coming in and trying to mitigate that downturn. They probably moved too slowly. If anything can be learned from the current events, is what your grandmother told you or remembered, is that a stitch in time saves nine if you move a little quicker. So that's one thing I would take from this whole experience.
Okay. We have a listener, Cliff in Silver Lake, wondering if there are any successful international models that we could follow. Locke Achishan, anyone else you could look to, or is the U.S. exceptional?
Well, I think one of my discussants earlier mentioned, that they're doing a pretty good job compared to where we were. We've learned a lot, and I think that is completely accurate. I'm not sure that I would prescribe the regulatory systems or management systems of other nations to the U.S. that quickly. You know, we certainly can improve what we're doing, partly by moving quicker and having better timing. But I don't think that there's a system out there that I would suggest we should shift to.
All right, let's take another listener call. Elise in Encino, good to have you with us on Air Talk.
Thank you very much. I agree we do need regulation, but I think this comes out and stems out of that we've set up a strange form of capitalism on, for example, the bailout, where we really privatized profit, but we're socializing risk. And number two, that we really started to get in problems when we eliminated the barrier between the big insurance industry and the banking industry and eliminated the Glass-Steagall Act. And I'd like to know, and we encouraged certain consequences for that. And does something back in the form of Glass-Steagall Act need to be instituted? And number three, that we've set up a format, a social economic environment where we have encouraged speculating and appear to still be doing that, which, for example, in the real estate bubble, that you have poor appraisals, you have in Wall Street exotic instruments not founded or based in facts or even on sound business principles.
Merrick Fuchs, you want to take that on?
Sure. I mean, I agree entirely. I think what we've set up is a sort of cover-your-tush capitalism. And the main thing is to get at that and to get at the sense of consequences that will come when you get at that. And that will help more than any of the aspects of Glass-Steagall that you can revive. I think, you know, again, not to belabor the point, but I do think that after everything that's said and done, we have to get to that.
All right. Charlie, driving on the Newport Freeway, you're on Air Talk.
Yeah, guys, I apologize if my call is breaking up. I'm now into kind of a rough area. But my question is, who actually owns the Federal Reserve?
Who wants to take that on? Jason Furman, you want to respond to that?
Sure. The Federal Reserve is effectively owned by the taxpayers. It makes a profit every year, and I might have this wrong, of about a few billion dollars, and that's remitted to the taxpayers. And it makes that profit because it can force banks to hold items that don't bear any interest and use that in effect to buy treasury bonds that do bear interest. And if, for example, the Bear Stearns bailout went bad, they would make a profit of less money in the future and might even lose money, and that would all come back to the taxpayer as well.
All right. Andrew in Corona Del Mar, you're on Air Talk.
Hi there. Given all the talk about Greenspan lowering rates too much and being the cause of, you know, potentially asset bubbles, can you guys explain why the government should be setting interest rates at all? That's something that's always confused me. Thanks.
Okay. Locke Achishan?
Well, I think, you know, Greenspan may have made a mistake with keeping rates low, but he's also, by using interest rates, demonstrated why it's a good idea. In the 1990s, particularly in the middle of the 1990s, he made a so-called preemptive move of raising interest rates in 1994 and then again to head off a bit of inflation. And then in 1995, even though inflation was beginning to rise, a preemptive move to ease so that there was no recession. And that was an important component of what was to be the longest expansion in U.S. history, 10 years long. And the reason that's more important, it's not just simply something for the record books, it's really important because I think you made in the order of 20 million jobs during that expansion. And in particular, you began to employ a lot of people who had been chronically unemployed as a result of the long expansion. Business began to train people who had for a long period of time been on welfare and other kind of benefits programs, and bringing them into the workforce. That is, you know, there's a lot of value there. So, to the degree that the monetary authorities, the Fed, can tame the business cycle, they're never going to get rid of it. But to tame it is a worthwhile effort. It is worth some of the risks here, but you need some good decision making. And you know, there's also it's a double-edged sword. It can also kind of work out badly if the policy is used to create a bubble.
No, you have to leave. Thank you, Lok Achashan. Right. We appreciate your being with us on Air Talk. Thank you.
Thank you.
From the Economic Cycle Research Institute, we continue with Marek Fuchs, the Business Press Maven columnist for TheStreet.com, and Jason Furman of the Brookings Institute's The Hamilton Project, which he directs. We're taking your calls, and we continue with Harry in Laguna Hills. You're on Air Talk.
Yes, thank you. It seems as though the subprime crisis was caused by a lot of greed, stupidity, and fraud. And I wonder if the enforcement of the fraud laws would help at least prevent the next subprime crisis. And by enforcement of the fraud, I mean middle managers who did not vet the loans properly, people who inflated their earnings, banks who sold bonds that they really had no idea what they were. Just have a more rigorous fraud law and enforce it.
Jason anyway. Furman?
I think the caller has a point that part of what has gone wrong was a certain amount of regulatory forbearance, where regulators chose not to vigorously use some of the tools and powers they had in their hands. And in thinking about reforms, we may want reforms that give regulators somewhat less latitude in the future and make it more likely that they will use some of the powers and tools they have at their disclosure, especially because what we've learned from this is fraud at the consumer level, when it comes to products related to debt, create actually systemic risk for the safety and soundness of the financial system as a whole. So those two are not two separate questions. Consumer protection really does help the financial system as a whole in this particular area.
Marek Fuchs?
Well, I think we have two things. I mean, there's certainly an element of fraud that went on here, especially in the lower end of the subprime market. But there's a difference between fraud and stupidity. And what we had was a little bit of fraud and a whole lot of stupidity and recklessness. And that's the type of thing you can't really crack down on. And that's also why we look at these repeated cycles of bubbles, because it gets to the point in the economic cycle where people just get dumber. And they get more reckless.
All right. Let's talk with Rick in the Mid-City District of L.A. You're on Air Talk.
Hello there.
Hi.
I'm calling because, well, I have either a question or a comment. I'm not sure which it is. President Bush and Secretary Paulson unveiled a plan several months ago to help homeowners who were caught up in the crisis. And I called the number they gave and talked with the Hope Alliance that they told us. And they contacted the lenders, and I found the plan is completely voluntary. The first lender told me they can't help me, I should do a short sale. The second lender was equally uninterested in helping me. And I'm just wondering, what good is that plan if it's completely voluntary?
Marek Fuchs?
Yeah, I mean, this is what we deal with these big national plans. It's just difficult. I don't know the precise details of what he's going through, but it's representative of the experience of a lot of people in like situations.
All right. Let's see. Jay in Malibu, you're on Air Talk.
Larry, I just want to commend you on a fabulous topic, and I think your guests are they all agree with me, so they're
so you're happy with that.
Smart people.
Thanks, Jay.
I used to borrow a lot of money in the 70s and 80s for commercial development, and one of the rules in the industry was that a developer will always borrow money. The only way that he'll be stopped is by somebody who's competent to say, I don't like your project. Your project doesn't make sense. When deregulation occurred in the savings and loan industry, we had hundreds or thousands of lenders who left the S&L industry, and they were replaced by commercial lenders who didn't know the S&L industry. And I think at that point, there started a really strange process where funds, large dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, weren't raised through the old commercial lender at the bank, but they were raised through these people in Wall Street who had completely different motivations. They weren't invested in the community. They didn't understand the markets. They were just really looking for returns. And I think deregulation that occurred years and years ago, and by the way, I also worked for Citibank. I also worked for Countrywide, and I've worked for credit reporting agencies. So I have a little bit of experience.
You've seen different sides of this. Yeah. Jason, from you want to respond to what Jay is saying about this going back to S&L deregulation?
Yeah, well, Jay, I think you're giving one example of perhaps a dozen where you see new types of banks or non-banks spreading into areas of the economy where they didn't used to be. And that's why I think something that Barney Frank proposed in a speech about two weeks ago, that we need to focus on regulating market behavior, not the form of the company. It doesn't matter whether it calls itself a commercial bank or an investment bank or a hedge fund. What matters is what it does. And if it lends money, it should be regulated as an entity that lends money, not just in terms of transparency, but also potentially in terms of capital or liquidity requirements. And with institutions and forms changing so rapidly, that's why we need to look at what you're actually doing.
Merrick Fuchs, what about the role of accounting in this? I mean, we have, again, questions about the role that, you know, major accounting companies have played in this process.
Right. I mean, you know, pricing these securities to model is almost, you know, cosmically comic or whatever you want to call it. But it's effectively saying you could, you know, slap any price on it you want. And, you know, that's certainly something to look into and something on the order of what we've seen in these scandals of the early 2000s.
Just in closing, I wanted to ask you, Jason Furman, about, you know, if housing values continue to drop, and I don't know, pulling a number out of a hat, let's say, you know, 20% more fall in values on a national basis or some such big number, what is the impact going to be financially?
The impact is potentially large. The one hope we have is that at least financial institutions now seem to have taken some of this into account with their write-downs. The folks that haven't are the consumers, and they were what kept the economy going through about November of last year. But since then, consumer spending has stalled, and should it continue to stall, we'll have what is likely a recession already. Become potentially deeper.
Gentlemen, I thank you so much for being with us, spending so much time taking a look at what's going on in the financial markets and the proposed changes in regulation from Treasury Secretary Paulson. Jason Furman of the Hamilton Project at Brookings and Mark Fuchs of TheStreet.com, where he writes the Business Press Maven column. As always, we appreciate your terrific calls, your questions and contributions to Air Talk. They just make the program. We thank you very much and have a wonderful day. This is 89.3 KPCC. See.